that Yaakov and Esav, then when they grew up, so the pasuk says that Yaakov, that Esav, the so to speak rishus, the so to speak wickedness of Esav was first manifested in the form of how the pasuk describes him as being an ish soda. He was an ish, sorry, yodet sayed, a ish yodet sayed ish soda. He was a man who knew how to trap. He was a man of the field. He grew into a person who was hunting and in the fields, a man of trapping. That was on the one hand, that was Esav. And on the other hand, Yaakov is an ish tam, is a pure person, yoshev olem, someone who dwelt in tents. So a lot of commentaries on this, but I saw a really beautiful explanation. And I think I spoke about this many years ago, so I found it in my notes. Rav Dessler quotes the Arizal regarding this description of Esav being an ish yodet sayed. He could trap with his mouth. So the Rashi quotes the famous Medrash that he would deceive his father and he would ask very kind of righteous, self-righteous kinds of questions of Chochmah. How'd you take Maisa? How'd you take tithes off of salt? How'd you take tithes off of straw? Which is a ridiculous question. The halacha is you don't take tithes off of salt. And even though the Torah hadn't been given yet, again, we've learned many times, they were aware of the laws of the Torah before the Torah was given, different discussion for a different time. But these kinds of questions were not really genuine questions. He wasn't asking genuine questions. And therefore, he was trapping his father with his mouth. So the obvious question is didn't Yitzchak realize that? Didn't he notice? Didn't he recognize the duplicity of his son Esav? How come he didn't see that? So again, commentaries galore on that idea. But the Arizal says the following. He says that the concept of with the mouth, trapping with the mouth, and the emphasis of the mouth is the idea that sometimes and many times a person can speak more about their ideas without the ideas being integrated really inside the heart. And in fact, you can actually use it as almost like a psychological ruse to step away from the responsibility of really attaching myself with my inspiration, which I have within. In other words, when you have an inspiration, when I'm inspired within, and I have a motivation inside of myself, I'm inspired, and I'm really contemplating, and I'm thinking about it, and I'm understanding it, and I'm connected to that inspiration, there's almost like a danger the more you talk about it. The more you talk about it, the more you externalize it, and then you can move away from that inspiration. And when it says that Esav was tzayed bepiv, there was an emphasis on the mouth, that his inspiration was externalized outside of his insides to his mouth. And that actually allowed him not to live up to that inspiration within. And this is also a pasuk in Mishlei. It says, Daiga belev ish, yashchena lach yashchena. That if a person has a daiga, the pasuk says, if a person has worry, you have worry and anxiety, yashchena. So one interpretation of the pasuk is, yashchena, suppress it. And that's one approach to dealing with worry and sadness and depression. There's a time and place to suppress it, not to speak about it too much. On the other hand, the Gemara also interprets the pasuk as yasechena, articulate it, speak about it. Because also when a person speaks about a worry and they externalize it, that actually suppresses it as well. That takes it away. So sometimes you have to kind of push down the worry inside and dismiss it, try to dismiss it. Time and place for everything. Sometimes you have to speak about it, because the more you talk about it, that's the trick. The more you talk about the worry, you externalize it. You're taking it out of your insides, and that's actually very therapeutic to talk about the worry to the right degree and to the right person at the right time. That's a discussion. But the concept is that externalizing ideas can diminish the potency of the idea itself. And that's how the Arizal explains Esav, there was tzayed bepiv, there was more emphasis on his outside, on his articulation of his inspiration, without an actual ownership and putting into practice of that inspiration on the inside. Right, that was on the one hand, that was Esav. And on the other hand, in contrast, we have Yaakov. He was an ish olim, a man of tents, which obviously paints this picture of being very private and being very concealed and very contemplative, meditative inside the tent, learning and developing oneself. And that's a very, very, just a thought, is a very powerful message of the right balance between containing and not articulating, not speaking too much, and speaking too much about one's inspiration. Rav Dessler even says, he says, the Alt of Kelm, he practiced this, we're discussing, Simcha Zisel of Kelm, he practiced this. As long as it hadn't dissipated within. So it was not that he ever spoke about it. As long as his own internal inspiration was still fresh and vibrant and alive, he wouldn't talk about it with other people. For this reason, because it would diminish the power of it once he's externalizing and talking about it. And he says, with regard to one matter, he never revealed that inspirational thought and idea for 25 years. For 25 years, he never spoke about this inspirational idea. Now, again, I'm not giving a prescription over here. We have to use this in the right way, but it's a message. It's an idea. It's something to think about. Am I talking about the ideas and the inspiration in a way which perhaps actually is diminishing that connection to it? Or am I keeping it within myself to let it ruminate, to marinate, to integrate, to be digested within myself? That's how inspirational ideas should be dealt with. That's the idea. So later on in the parasha, though, there is an episode which is very mysterious and really hard to understand why the Torah goes to town speaking so much about this episode, and that is about the wells, right? So the wells, it's the story of the wells. The name of this class is called Well Power, not Willpower, Well Power, because there's a lot of mention of wells in the parasha. Now, wells come up a lot in the Chumash, especially in Bereishis, and the first time that a similar episode to this parasha occurred was back in Parshas Vayera with Avraham Avinu. And Avraham Avinu and Sarah, we know, because of the famine in Eretz Yisrael, they had to go to, they first went to Mitzrayim, but they also later on went to a place called Gerar, which is the land of Plishtim. And Avimelech was the king over there in this place called Gerar. And they went there for the because of the famine. But while they were there, they flourished. Avraham and Sarah flourished. He developed a lot of business development and cattle and produce, and he did very well for himself. But while he was there, the Pasuk says, back in Vayera, it says that Avraham Avinu, he disputed Avimelech regarding a well of water. Pasuk says that he disputed Avimelech regarding a well of water that the servants of Avimelech had stolen from Avraham. And there was a dispute. Because of this dispute about this well, so then Avraham Avinu was so concerned about the rightful ownership of that well that it should not be contested and be taken by anyone else. He made sure to make a treaty, a shavua, an oath with Avimelech about this well to guarantee the tenure and the ownership at this well. And the Pasuk says, Al Kain Kore L'Mokamahu Beer Sheva. And that's why that location was called Beer Sheva, Be'er, well, Sheva of an oath. The well of oaths, the well of oaths, because he took it, or the well of the treaty between him and Avimelech. And that guaranteed them, he called it the well of oath, the well of Be'er Sheva, Kisham Nishbu Shnei, because that's where the two of them made a treaty. They made an oath between each other, a pact between each other. Now this place, Be'er Sheva, I think we spoke about it. I'm having deja vu. We spoke about this a number of years ago when we were in Eitz Chaim in Elkins Park. But we were discussing then, I remember now, we were discussing, is the Be'er Sheva over here the same Be'er Sheva, the same location as it is today? So I think we were looking into it. It's not so clear. There are historical sites in Be'er Sheva today, which they claim this is where Avraham Avinu lived, because the Pasuk says that this Be'er Sheva, where he made this treaty with Avimelech, It was also the place where he set up his Eshel, the Eshel Avram, the very famous Eshel Avram. The Eshel Avram refers to either the orchard of Avram Avinu or the inn of Avram Avinu. It was from there that they offered hospitality to guests, and they also proclaimed in the name of Hashem. They taught about Hashem to the people who came to them. But that's where Be'er Sheva came from. That's the name Be'er Sheva, because it was the well of this oath, which he made with Avimelech. But it was about the well. It was about making sure that he had proper propriety on this well. It was his well, and no one should contest that well. So that was then. But this parasha goes to town much more on it. In this parasha, the pasuk says, this is in chapter 26, it goes on, it says, the pasuk says that now, first of all, Yitzchak and Rivka had a similar experience of also going to Grah because of a famine too. It's almost like deja vu. There's a lot of repeats between Yitzchak and Rivka and Avraham and Sarah. So Yitzchak and Rivka also go to Grah because of famine in Eretz Israel. And they also flourish. They also are very successful. In fact, the pasuk says that he found that Yitzchak Yimtze Boshana Ahi, in that year when he was in Grah, he found Meyash Sha'arim, which is a hundredfold. His produce was so successful, a hundredfold. Everything was so, his business was a hundredfold successful. And that's the origin, the expression of the name Meyash Sha'arim. Meyash Sha'arim in Yerushalayim, that's where it comes from, this the pasuk says. So he was very successful. And again, Gerar is in Plishtim, the land of the Philistines. So he was very successful there. And then it says that all of the wells, right, the wells which Avram Avinu dug and the Plishtim had stopped up years ago after Avram Avinu had passed away. So now the servants of Yitzchak redug those wells because they were his wells. Now, remember, we only spoke about one well. This Forno says that there was actually three wells that Avram Avinu dug. And these were important. These were his wells. And the Plishtim stopped them up. They filled them up with dirt. And now in this parasha it says that Yitzchak and his servants, they redug those wells. They took the dirt out and they refilled those wells. Good. So it was an important thing to do. You know, obviously on one level, just a pshat level, water was extremely precious. They needed the water. And if there was famine, so then, you know, water was, these wells were very, very valuable and very much needed by everyone. Now, why did the Plishtim stop them up if there was famine going on around? So why were the Plishtim stopping up and blocking up the wells of Avram Avinu? So Rashi says that the reason is because they were concerned about marauding troops coming in and then using the water supplies to attack them. So therefore, they felt it was strategic to fill in to stop up the wells of Avram Avinu. I guess they had their own wells and in their own locations. But these wells that Avram Avinu had dug, you know, the local Plishtim were afraid that this was going to be ammunition for the marauding troops that are coming in who are going to be attacking them. Therefore, they stopped them up. But that's what the pasuk describes. And then again, so Yitzchak now redigs, but they belong to Avram, so he redigs them. He redigs those three wells, but moreover, he digs three more wells, right? And the pasuk goes on to say that they also dug and they found another well, a Be'er Mayim Chayim. And this next well, which they dug, in addition to the first three wells that they redug of Avraham Avinu, this next well started a whole fight because Yariv Roi Gerah, because the shepherds of Gerah started messing around and arguing with the shepherds of Yitzchak. And they said, the water belongs to us. And because of this fight around this fourth well, V'yikra Shema Be'er Esek. So Yitzchak called that fourth well Esek. I forgot to mention, the pasuk also emphasizes the fact that the wells which he redug from Avram Avinu, he renamed them with the same names that Avram Avinu gave as well. So it's very fascinating, the fact that these wells are it's like children. Like, these wells are so precious, they get special names. So here, the fourth well, they find water, a fight erupts around this well, and then Yitzchak names the well Esek, right? He calls it Esek because the word Esek also has a connotation meaning arguments and quarreling. So he calls this fourth well quarrel, the well of quarreling. And then they dug another well, the Yeruva Gamalan, they quarrel about that as well, but it gets worse. the quarreling gets much worse than the previous one. And because of that, he calls it sitna, because that means hatred, because it developed a sudden hatred and real seething animosity between Yitzchak's servants and Avimelech's servants. So he calls it sitna, from the word satan, or the word sitan is satan, actually, but also means hatred as well, has a connotation of hatred. Then it says, V'yatig misham. And then after this fifth well, which was the subject of all of this fighting and quarreling, they then moved away from there. He realized, you know what? Once, if the arguments get too strong with your neighbors, maybe there's a time to leave. You don't want to continue the arguments and make situations even worse. So he gets up from there. And again, he digs another well. And the sixth well which he digs, he calls Rechovas, because regarding this well, there's no arguments. They don't get into a fight. It's all peaceful. Everything is all fine. And the word Rechovot or Rechovos means expansiveness. So it implies a sense of peace and tranquility. And that's where the name Rechovot, modern day city, comes from, because of this sixth well which Yitzchak dug. And it goes on to talk more about the goings on between Yitzchak and Avimelech. And at the end of the entire passage, when Yitzchak's about to leave, so one more well. Vayiba Yomahu, on that day when he was about to leave, Vayavo Avde Yitzchak, the servants of Yitzchak came along, Vagidalo, and they told him, Alodas, they spoke to him about a well which they dug, another well which they dug. And they said, we found water. And they're all excited. We found water. Another well. If there's not enough wells, here's another well. We've got a seventh well. Vayikro saw Shiva. And then Yitzchak calls the seventh well Shiva. Right? Shiva, because the word Shiva is seven. So he appropriately calls it Shiva. Al-Kain Shema'i. And therefore, the name of the city is called Beersheva. Ad Yom Hazeh, till this day. Well, that's kind of funny, because it's the same Beersheva as has already been named. So why is he renaming Beersheva? And also, why does it say Ad Yom Hazeh, until this day? It didn't say that when Avraham Avinu named his well Beersheva. It just says over there that he named it after the well of oaths. And the word Sheva, by the way, can either mean seven or oath, right? Shavuah, actually, it's the same word. Shavuah is either an oath or a week. Shavuah is a week, but it's from the word seven. And there's discussion as to why an oath is related to the number seven for a different time. But Avraham Avinu named his well and Beersheva after the fact that he made the treaty and the Shavuah with Avimelech. And therefore he called it Beersheva. And if you look at the words carefully over there, actually the Pasuk doesn't say, it says over there, Ber Shova. There it says with Avraham Avinu, it's called a Ber Shova, like a komat and a patah, because that connects to the Shavuah, Shovah, because he swore and made an oath with Avimelech. So therefore, the proper pronunciation of that phrase there is Ber Shovah. Here, it's actually Ber Sheva, because this, with Yitzchak, it's the seventh well. It's the seventh well. But still, the fact that the name of the place is being renamed again, and then again, why the Pasuk says with this Ber Sheva, it says, and it was named Ber Sheva up until the present day. And up until the present day, whenever the Torah says up until the present day, it always means up until today, 2024, all the way up until the present time. That's what it means, is it for eternity. So the question is, obviously, like, what is all this fuss about wells? So again, even though, water was so essential, they needed the water because of the drought, but for the Torah to spend so much time talking about these wells and about the names of the wells and about the plishtim filling them in and then Yitzchak taking them again and then digging them up and digging more wells. I mean, the whole thing is so mysterious. What's it about? What's it all about? So there is a very famous Ramban, Nachmanides, who says, he quotes the famous concept of Maisa Ova Simon Lebonim, that whatever the patriarchs and the matriarchs did became a signpost and a sign and a portent for the future generations of the Jewish people. And that's a classic, basic concept. The Bereishis, Sefer Bereishis, why are there so few mitzvahs in Bereishis and Sefer Bereishis? Because the purpose of Sefer Bereishis is to establish the foundations, the spiritual foundations of the Jewish people for all of eternity. And everything which happens in Bereishis is all about setting the foundations, and every action they took and every movement they engaged in, everything they did was creating like spiritual roots and spiritual foundations for the entire Jewish people for the future. So it's a very big idea, and many, many, many examples of this in Sefer Bereishis. But this, Ramban says, is an example of this, particularly with Yitzchak and his wells. He says this really regard to the last four wells that Yitzchak dug. And he says, and the names as well. So the Ramban says, he says, this is a remez, it's an allusion to the future Bati Mikdash, the future temples, Beis HaMikdash, and the Mishkan as well. It's a remez because, think about it, a well. When we talk about what is a well? A well is it's a well of water, but water symbolizes what? Symbolizes spirituality. It symbolizes Be'er Mayim Chaim, the Pasuk says. It's a well of living waters, because the Torah and the mitzvahs and Ruchnius is the real well of living waters. In fact, the Gemara says in Brachos, in the chapter which talks about dreams, very amazing chapter of Brachos about the interpretation of dreams. So the Gemara says, if a person sees a well in a dream, Roa Shalom, then he sees peace. If he sees a well in the dream, it's a portent for peace because of the Pasuk, because of this Be'er Mayim Chaim, because a well symbolizes Mayim Chaim, water of life, water of nourishment, water of peace and spirituality. You see a well in the dream, you can look forward to peace. Then the Gemara says another opinion. Reb Nosson says, you see a well in the dream, Matzah Torah, it's a signal, it's an indication. You found Torah. You've become connected to Torah. So that's the symbolism of a well, symbolizing spirituality, the wellspring of Ruchnius in a person's life. So with that backdrop, the Ramban says that the wells that Yitzchak dug and gave these names to them is an allusion to the Beis HaMikdash, the three Bati Mikdash. The three Bati Mikdash, the first one, the second one, and the future one. He says the first one is, it was, and he called it Asek, because the word Asek means argumentation and fights and machlokas, because there were so many machlokasim and so many arguments and so much contention in the time of the first Beis HaMikdash, as was the second one also, but it began with the first Beis HaMikdash. So therefore this well of Beis HaMikdash, which Yitzchak is now digging, and he's setting into potential motion, the existence of a Be'er Mayim Chaim, of a Beis HaMikdash in the future, it's going to experience challenge. It's going to experience contention. It's going to experience opposition. It's going to experience milchama and war and arguments. And therefore, he called it Asek. That's number one. The second well, he called it Sitna, which is much worse. And the word Sitna, again, from the word Satan, it's a much more insidious, oppositional type of hatred and opposition, antagonism. And that's alluding to the second Beis HaMikdash, because in the second Beis HaMikdash, there's a pasuk in Ezra where it says, "Umalchus Achashverosh betachilas malchusay kasvus sitna al yoshva Yehuda v'Yerushalayim," that in the kingdom of Achashverosh, at the beginning of his rulership, they wrote like an accusation and a sitna, like a force of a word of accusation and prosecution against the inhabitants of Yehuda and Yerushalayim. For Kol Yomav Hayulanu Lesitna, and all of the days of the second Beis HaMikdash, it was nothing but persecution and accusation until the destruction of the Beis HaMikdash itself. And therefore, that's alluded to again in Yitzchak's naming of the second well, Sitna, the second Beis HaMikdash. It's a remez to the second Beis HaMikdash. The third one, though, the third well, no quarreling, no fighting, no contention. Rechovos. Is the third well. And that's an allusion to the third Beis HaMikdash. The third Beis HaMikdash, Habayis HaOsit, the third Beis HaMikdash in the future, Shibane b'meher of Yomeinu, which will be rebuilt quickly in our days, for Yaseh b'lariv hamatzah, it's going to be made without any contention and arguments and fighting. V'akel yarchiv eskevuleinu, Hashem will expand our borders, expand our boundaries, we'll have freedom and peace. as he says, the pasuk says Yarach Veshem Elokech, etc., etc. That's the third base of Mikdash, and the fourth, they're the three wells. The fourth well, which is the well of Sheva, he says that alludes to the well of the Mishkan of Mishkan Shiloh. Now, why it's in that order? It's reverse order because the Batei HaMikdash came after Mishkan Shiloh. But the way he explains it, that fourth well of Be'er Sheva alludes to the well of the Mishkan. So this is the Ramban, right? So it's an allusion. It's another idea of the fact that everything which happened is all it's projecting the energies of these events into the future and concretizing it, becoming more concretized in the form of other forms of Be'er Sheva, of a Be'er Mayim Chayim, of the base of Mikdash and the Mishkan in the future. So that's how the Ramban learns it. So a good, you know, it's a good example to underscore that idea of Maisa of a similar bonnet. But there's another end and explanation which I saw in the Nesiv Shalom, which I think really is a very beautiful explanation and has a lot of a practical import. So he says, based upon the Medrash, that, and this also includes and explains all the seven wells. Because remember, there's three wells which Avraham Avinu dug, which Yitzchak then redug, and then the additional four wells which Yitzchak dug. So what are they referring to? What are they alluding to? So the Nesiv Shalom says, based upon the Medrash, that all these wells, seven, six wells, and the seventh well, are alluding to the days of the week. They're all alluding to the days of the week. And it's also predicated upon the same idea of Maisa Avosim Lebonim, that the patriarchs are setting the stage and forging into the spiritual DNA of the Jewish people our mission. What is our mission? What is the mission of the Jewish people? Again and again and again, we said over and over and over again, our mission is to be mesakein, to fix, to elevate the physical world, to elevate ourselves, to bring kedusha, to correct the holes, the spiritual holes in life, and to become partners in Hashem in bringing kedusha to the world. We can say this in a gazillion different ways, but tikkun ha'olam, you know, this popular expression of tikkun olam, which is distorted in the secular world because it's interpreted as making the world a better economic place, better making the world a healthier place, making the world more productive, fixing the world, making the environment, and all these like different ideas. It doesn't, I'm not saying it doesn't include that, but it certainly doesn't begin there or end there. The real definition of Tikkun Olam is fixing the world and remedying the world and bringing the Kedusha, bringing the presence of Hashem into the world. That's our mission. That's the Jewish people, right? We know that. That's our mission. Every day, that's our mission. Tikkun, 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 Tikkun. Rectifying ourselves, and through rectifying of ourselves, we're rectifying everyone else. Every day of the week, that's our mission. This is what Avraham Avinu and Yitzchak were forging into our souls, this role, this function of performing Tikkun every single day. And a symbolic way to look at Tikkun, our own remedy, Tikkun, is digging, digging into the well of life, digging into the well of life, digging into our souls, digging into the source of Kedusha, digging in and trying to dig in. Now, what happens when we dig in? What happened to Avraham Avinu and Yitzchak when they dug? When they dug, all of a sudden these nasty plishtim came along, and they came along and they filled in the wells with dirt and earth. Who are the plishtim? The plishtim is an embodiment of what's called the Sitra Achra, the Yetzirah. They're all of the forces of negativity, the forces of evil. The plishtim represent the Yetzirah and the Sitra Achra, the other side, which tries to thwart and suppress our efforts of digging and finding waters of living life. That's what they did. They filled the wells in. And when we're engaged, when Avraham Avinu was, when we're engaged in our daily tikkun, we are confronted with the forces of plishtim who are trying to dig and suppress and block up our wellspring of life, which we're trying to dig for ourselves. But the answer is, or the what we see in the passage is, there's never relenting. There's no relent. There's no letting up. Every day, there's a be'er for Sunday. there's a be'er for Monday. These were the first three be'eros, the first three wells that Avraham Avinu dug. Digging wells, finding spirituality, digging in, bringing it out, bringing the water out every day. So then he does 3 days. Yitzchak comes along. He redigs those first three and he redigs and he starts digging three more wells. He digs three more wells after those ones, brand new ones, and has and express and puts names to those wells, expressing the opposition, the antagonism and the difficulty of trying to find the water, but always fighting and always persisting and always forging forward, finding the water inside the well. And this goes on. The only two wells where it's really expressed that is there's opposition is those first two is Asek and Sitna. The third well which Yitzchak dug, already a little bit of kind of reprieve. Why? That's the well of Erev Shabbos, the well of the 6 days, the well of Erev Shabbos. You already feel a little bit of relief. You feel a little bit of like reprieve that even though we've gone through the week of challenges, the week of darkness, the week of ups and downs and difficulty and trying to find yourself and trying to find a sense of light and purpose, difficult. Comes Friday. Friday comes and you already see the lights of Shabbos arriving. You feel a little bit of relief. You feel a bit of expansiveness. And therefore, the sixth well, the sixth day of the week is Rechovos. It's Rechovos, this sense of expansiveness. And then the last well of all, remember the Pasuk, the only well that the Pasuk actually says that the servants of Yitzchak announced very emphatically, we found water, we found water. It says at one time with the last well on the seventh well. The seventh well, because what's the seventh well? What is the seventh well? It's Shabbos. The seventh well is the most powerful, the most nourishing, the most life-giving well of the entire week. And that's announced, we found water! We found water! And there's such an excitement that we found the seventh well, and they dug the seventh well. And that's why this last well, aside from being called Be'er Sheva, from the word seven, that's why the Pasuk says, Ad Hayom Hazeh, up until this present day, because if this well is the well of Shabbos, this is for all of eternity. This is the way, you see, the well which Avraham Avinu dug and named the place Be'er Sheva after the oath and the treaty with Avimelech, that was a temporal event with the treaty, based upon the treaty with Avimelech. That didn't have eternal reverberations in the form of something which was always going to be there. So that's why, that's number one, why it's being renamed over here. It's being named once again, but being renamed once again, not based upon the Shavuah, the treaty with Avimelech, but being named once again based upon the new dimension of this place over here, where the seventh well of Shabbos is being dug, which is Ad Hayom Hazeh, up until this present day. And therefore, he said, that's the whole understanding. That's how he understands the illusion of these seven wells, which is really inspiring because it's a good way and a very helpful way to be able to look at every single day of the week and to think about that as the day begins, every day, yeah, we're going to face challenges. Every day is going to be challenges. I mean, there should be less challenges. We shouldn't have to have challenges. But we're mature. We understand life brings challenges. And those challenges, those ups and downs are really the material of life. That's the material of growth. I heard once there was a cardiologist who said that a cardiologist who was not concerned about the ups and downs of his son in yeshiva. And he said, I'm a cardiologist. He says a flat line is not a good sign. You know, growth requires ups and downs. So yes, every day there's going to be an ups and downs. But if we can try to look at every day, think about it, like visualize every day as being a be'er, being a well of water, a well of spiritual potential. Every day has a potential for spirituality. Don't look at yesterday. Don't look at tomorrow. Just look at today. Try to imagine, visualize, I'm standing by a well of a be'er, of a Mayim Chayim, that there's tremendous spiritual energy and potential in every single day. There's a it's in the Chovos HaLevavos, he quotes the duties of the heart, Reuven's favorite. You can tell Reuven later on, Chovos HaLevavos. So he said, so the Chovis Levaz in his introduction says that, quoting the Pasuk, "My mamukim eitza belev ish." Deep water, deep waters is counsel in the heart of a person. V'ish tevuna yidlana. An understanding person can draw it out. In other words, Shlomo Melech says that the counsel and guidance and wisdom and clarity is like deep waters inside of our heart. It's a powerful idea, he says, because he says that that is to say, shachochma tekur b'teva ha'adam, chochma, wisdom, is actually anchored inside the nature of a person, ubekoach hakaroso, and in the potential of his being able to recognize it, like water, which is contained and hidden inside the heart of the ground. It's inside the ground. V'anovin u'maskel, an intelligent, smart person, is mishtadol, puts out effort, lachkur achrei achokma, to pursue that wisdom, which is latent inside of one's potential, hidden away, leglosa larosa, to be able to reveal it and to show it. V'hushoivosa meliba, and he draws it out from inside of his heart. He draws it out, k'moshehu mechapes esamayim, like he's searching for water, which is hidden inside of the depths of the ground. Meaning that we have within ourselves, so this Mayim Chayim, this well of life, is also inside of me. Now, doesn't mean to say that we don't have to go elsewhere. It's inside the neshama. It needs wisdom to be able to draw it out. And in combination with learning and doing mitzvahs and doing chesed and davening, you bring out from within yourself all of these hidden treasures, these hidden kochas, these hidden powers and energies inside of ourselves. Every day has that potential. Every day, there's a Be'er Mayim Chayim inside of me today. There's one tomorrow. But the best one of all, the best well of all, is coming tonight. In a few hours from now, when the sun sets, we're going to be stepping into the best Be'er Mayim Chayim of Shabbos. There's no comparison. There's no comparison. That nothing can replace the inspirational power of Shabbos as the ultimate Be'er Mayim Chayim. If we keep it, if we keep the Shabbos, if we pull back and don't get engaged in the world and put aside everything behind us and just go into this different zone, go into a different reality, go into a different experience, go into a different sense of attachment and closeness and experience of the Almighty. We go into that space. That is the best source of life for the entire week. And that's why I said that's the Be'er Sheva of Shabbos. So that's how he understands this passage over here. So may we all succeed in drawing out life and energy from every day of the week, but in particular, to be able to draw it out from Shabbos.